first case on the calendar is 97-517 William George versus Administrator of Ohio Bureau of Workers' Compensation, Ms. Adler.
Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of the time.
That's your time.
The issue in this case is whether a claimant who is successful on appeal to the court on rights versus the same issue is entitled to reimbursement for both forms of deposition, photographic and photographic, under 41.13.512. I'm going to tell you that the answer to this question is yes and why. 41.23.512 contains the cost section for the cost of deposition. These are recoverable by the successful and unsuccessful claimants. This honorable court has held in the ABIS decision that these deposition costs are recoverable by both successful and unsuccessful claimants, and all must release their demographic fee and deduction costs. 41.23.512 pertains to the cost of any fee and only applies to successful claimants. In this case, we believe the Court of Appeals erred in following the court's prior pronouncement in the William P. Collisar decision in limiting reimbursement to the successful claimant for both forms of deposition costs. William P. Collisar only addressed the issue of an unsuccessful claimant and actually kept the door open by stating that since the claimant in the instant case did not prevail, Moore does not control. The Moore case was decided in 1985, and in that case, it dealt with the payment of an expert witness fee. The claimant was successful because the deposition of the expert witness, although it did not transcribe the file, where with junior appeal before trial, the claim was successful on the appeal. The lower court specifically held in finding that cost of that expert witness fee was payable, that this fell under the broad provision 41.23.512F, cost of managing the proceedings. The cost of managing the proceedings in this case reached an also covered in alternative form of deposition in this case. The George Appellate Court in Montgomery County held that the claimant at his option could pay one cost under paragraph D, but indicated that they did not believe that F would apply to award the claimant the other form of the deposition cost under F. We believe that that is a flawed analysis of the William P. Collisar decision, as well as the case on which the appellee relies on. The courts throughout the state have misapplied the decision of this court in Williams v. Collisar by not noting the distinction between successful and unsuccessful claimants. We submit to you that in under workers' compensation, the legislature by enacting F has made it clear, and this court interpreted it in Moore, that successful claimants should, their recovery should not be dissipated by the legal cost incurred in pursuing their claim to the Court of Common Pleas on their right to participate.
Well, the General Assembly enacting D specifically referred to depositions that are read in a trial. F is, as you acknowledge, is more general. Why should we not adopt the administrator's view on this point that we should follow the instruction of the statute, the section of the statute that is more specific?
Your Honor, I believe that that's a flawed analysis and it doesn't give the plain ordinary meaning to the statute. What does paragraph F mean? What would be the purpose of F if it states the cost of any legal proceedings, including an attorney's fee, is much broader? And this court in Moore indicated that that is a much broader provision. And again, Moore indicated they did not want to see the claimant's recovery dissipated by the cost of the court. We believe that, as the appellee argued, that they indicated it would be statutory construction to find that the cost of the alternate form of cost being paid under F. This, in our case, Your Honor, the Montgomery County local rules require that if we file the videotape, it must be accompanied by a stenographic copy. Obviously, those rules of procedure in our common police court follow the pronouncement and the court superintendent's rules provide that videotape depositions are to be considered as costs.
In your view, is there any limit on the number that you could have? Supposing you had three expert medical witnesses and you did both stenographic and videotape. Any cost limit on it at all, in your view?
Your Honor, to answer the question, I don't believe there would be a cost limit per se. Obviously, though, paragraph F only applies to a successful claimant. So if the court is concerned about the cost, this court in Acres has already ruled that deposition costs are reimbursable both to the claimant as well as to the employer when the doctor gives deposition testimony. And this court in Williams v. Collison said that one form of that is payable, but found that it was at the option of the claimant. In our case, and of course, as we point out, the Williams case did not have a local rule requiring the stenographic copy also filed simultaneously. In this case, we did. Our court required that we file a stenographic copy, which obviously aids the trial court in ruling out objections that may be made during the physician's deposition.
Well, the local rule makes this case different maybe than some of the others, but my concern is that you could then pile up, if you would, in one that you knew was probably going to be successful, an inordinate amount of expense, and you could duplicate it needlessly.
Your Honor, speaking for claimants in the state of Ohio, I don't believe that would necessarily occur.
I agree. Have you ever seen it done?
No, I haven't.
I have.
And,
in fact, I'm not sure we didn't do it on occasion when they gave us a hard time.
And I don't think it would be done. And obviously, workers' compensation claimants do not recover the same way that a PI claimant recovers. They receive only a portion of their loss insofar as a portion of their wages and medical bills. They have no claim for monetary damages. So we believe the legislature intended that, and that this court is previously held in the law, that a successful claimant's recovery should not be dissipated by the cost prevailing on their right to participate.
Although the statutory scheme of 512 really doesn't make a claimant whole, I mean, you would concede that, I mean, it pays some attorney's fees, but nobody would really expect that pays a claimant's entire attorney's fees. It reimburses the claimant somewhat,
yes,
right? And so perhaps, you know, the deposition costs, your argument is premised on the idea that, you know, it sounds like you're saying the claimant needs to be made whole in these costs. Perhaps the scenario where in your jurisdiction where you have to have both, the claimant must elect which, you know, to be paid under D for the stenographic, and the video is going to be, you know, one of those costs that won't be reimbursed by the state.
Your Honor, we believe that is an unfair burden on the claimant to make an election. I don't think anyone would question whether or not a jury or a judge, for that matter, would prefer to watch the actual witness testifying to be able to assess that witness's credibility, as opposed to reading or listening to that.
I don't think anybody would disagree that you know, if that a video might be a preferable median for trying a case. The statute's been amended. Has it been clarified since the filing of your case?
It's been filed. I would point out that the statute has been amended only as to D, to specifically state stenographic cost. So our position, I believe, would stand under the new statute. It does not require that call authority overruled, but we would ask thought that this court would find that the additional form of deposition and is properly reimbursed under paragraph F, which is in compliance with this court's previous pronouncement in Moore, it is not inconsistent with the Acres decision, because the Acres decision indicates that the deposition costs are paid for unsuccessful claimants as well as successful claimants, but F, the cost of any legal proceeding, is that catch-all general provision, which we believe the General Assembly intended, and this court has previously interpreted under Moore, to try as best as they can to make claimants whole.
Well, the key is what does costs mean? Costs of all legal proceedings. Of course, the key is what we construe costs to include. Right. And it isn't all of your attorney's fees. It's attorney's fees up to, you know, the statutory amount.
But and we're talking about a reasonable cost.
Yeah.
$150 is at issue in this case.
Mm-hmm.
$150, which we believe the trial court correctly ruled under F, was properly reimbursed at the cost of any legal proceeding.
Does this claimant counsel wish to divide the expenses? Am I understanding it that your theory is that the stenographic should be payable under D and that the video should be payable under F?
Your Honor, the appellate court ruled it was at the claimant's election. We now have an amended statute in the fall of 1997, and we have the Williams case, which indicated it was at claimant's election, although the Williams case did not involve
the rule.
I believe that if you give interpretation to stenographic under D, the videotape could fall under F and should fall and be properly reimbursed under a proper reading of F. And all the cases...
The same deposition, yes, the same witness would be paid under two sections of the same...
It's a format, Your
yeah.
Honor. The stenographic format would be paid under D.
Right.
Probably reimbursed under F.
Thank you, Ms. Abbott.
I'm going to ask you to consider two words. Analyzing this case. Those two words are expressly and reasonably. Based on those two words, the reimbursement for both costs is not required and it's not a matter. Expressly comes to us through a long line of cases, and as far as workers' compensation goes, culminating with the Williams case, where this court says costs are not synonymous with expenses unless expressly made so by statute. In this case, through the Williams case and through the amended statute, the deposition costs are specifically and expressly taken care of. They're allowed under the amended statute, you're allowed the stenographic. Under Williams, this court said that dual payment was not required. There's really no need to even examine the language of Section F.
What specific language in Williams and Collisard do you rely on, sir?
I'm relying on the language under the subheading. Well, actually, there's an introductory paragraph.
Which page? 643?
Your Honor, I have the Lexis.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, sir.
So I can't tell you which page it's on. But the introductory paragraph talks about costs not being synonymous with expenses. There then is another paragraph that is entitled Videotape Testimony. There were three separate issues in the Williams case. There was videotape testimony, there were expert witness fees, and there was the replaying of the doctor's deposition. Under Williams, right at the end, before the expert witness fee subheading begins, it says, dual payment was therefore properly denied.
Dual payment of what?
Dual payment of both video and steno expenses.
And where does it say that's what we're talking about, the majority, because that was a 4-3 case, wasn't it? It was.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Where does it specifically say it's talking about video and stenographic? And the reason I ask is because the majority at the end, quote, section D1C provides that the, quote, the expense of playing a videotape recording a trial shall be borne by the court. And then it says, as such, reimbursement to claimant is inappropriate. Now, if the court is supposed to bear the burden, that means the claimant isn't.
Your Honor, I believe that this court was talking about the replay, the actual physical replay,
yes.
Putting the videotape in the machine, editing out objections, that sort of thing. That is to be borne by the court.
Oh, you mean the court hires the bailiff to put it in? You think that's what they were talking about?
Yes.
Put it in the video machine?
I think this court was talking about the videotape replay, yes. This court was talking about the showing of the videotape as opposed to paying the cost of putting it on videotape.
Where's the expense of showing the videotape?
That's the point.
Your Honor, speaking from my own experience, it can be a sizable expense. In the jurisdictions that I practice in, the judges will say that we're not in a position...
No, it's a simple question, isn't it? Where is the expense of showing the videotape? Tell me what bill you get for showing the videotape or the court gets. How much is that?
Your Honor, I've got a bill for $50 or $100.
For showing it on the screen?
Yeah.
Your Honor, it's not necessarily just that, because if you have objections and you have a jury there, then the objections need to be edited. You need to have somebody there to go through it. Sometimes the judges will rule sitting from the bench, and it gets to be a significant expense for the amount of time that an outsider is there doing that work.
Well, it's a court reporting firm that you pay that comes to show the video.
Yes, Your Honor. Our court reporter is hired by our office to come and show it, because some judges don't want to burden their staff with doing it.
And who bears that cost?
Typically, that cost has been borne by our office. I'm not sure that it should be. I think that the playback is the requirement of the court, but we simply made that payment ourselves.
The reason I ask the question, sir, is because I don't know where it would be in the Lexis, because what happens is the reporter under that system suddenly devises head notes that don't ever come from the court. I read things, and sometimes those head notes, when I reproduce it, that I thought, did we decide that in that case? That looks a little foreign to me. So I just want to look at the case itself. And it happens to be on the bottom of page 644 of the one that I'm looking at, but it's under the expert witness fee designation. That may help.
Yes, sir, I'm there.
Okay, the third paragraph. Quote, the cost of the deposition, as that phrase is used in 519, includes only the stenographic costs, which include the cost of the court reporter attending the deposition and the fee for producing the original and copies that are required, but does not include the cost of the physician's fee. Weren't we making a distinction, or the majority was making a distinction between physician's fee as cost and the cost of whatever the mechanical process is to get it before the court?
Yes, I would agree with that. I think that there were three separate issues in Williams that we decided.
Okay, but when we talk about the stenographic costs, is not the reproduction of the video a copy of the stenographic, and therefore, does it not say, for producing the original and copies that are required, and here you had a local rule that required it.
Sir, Your Honor, I would disagree with that.
Okay.
It's a different animal. You have the steno, which is obviously the written word of the witness,
mm-hmm.
and you have the video, which is the live performance of the witness.
And the section that Justice Douglas is quoting from the case, of course, is under the section on expert witness fee rather than the section dealing with the preserving in stenographic and videotape forms. It's a different section.
Yes, it is. It's a different part of the opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's clearly in the opinion, though, isn't it?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay.
The other word that I mentioned earlier on was reasonable. The Moore case talks about reasonableness, and of course, all legal proceedings should go forward under a reasonableness standard. The court says that claims recovery shall not be dissipated by reasonable mitigation expenses.
Because it's there.
For purposes of this case, is it reasonable to require the state to pay two forms of the same exact deposition? All we have is a different media, a different form of the deposition. The testimony is exactly the same in both forms.
But you would not deny, would you, that the impact of a videotape on a jury far greater than somebody simply sitting on the witness stand reading.
Your Honor, I don't know if I can necessarily agree with that or not. At times, I would agree with you that it's better to have a video. But I've had situations myself, I've talked to judges involved in cases where they thought that it would be better if it was just read.
But you can't really judge credibility as easily when you have a different person speaking the words.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that. But just
and if the court that you're practicing in says if you use the video, strategically you may decide it's far more important than written, and the court says you have to also file written, why does that become unreasonable if the claim is successful?
Your Honor, that the use of the video is a choice. It's not required. It's not required. And as many things are when we have a case where you have a choice to call a witness. You just can't put that witness on and do whatever you please with that witness. You're guided by the rules of evidence. Rule 611 talks about a witness, direct examination of a witness. You can't cross-examine your own witness.
It seems to be a choice that goes to the essence of judge's credibility, not just the format. I mean, looking a witness in the eye on a videotape is a lot more effective than judging credibility if that's the close call.
Your Honor, at times perhaps it is easier to judge credibility, but from a practical point of view, at times the TV's on, the courtroom is dark, people become weary and tired after listening to a medical deposition for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. I know I've seen jurors sleeping during that. And I'm not saying that they're bad, it's just that there seems to be an impression, and at least as far as this case is concerned, from the plaintiff's perspective, that a video is the absolute best. There's nothing better than a video, and that's the end of the world.
I'm sure you've seen the flip side where you have a very, very lousy witness who speaks very poor English when they don't video. And they just do the stenographer, and they have somebody nice and clean and neat suit and tie reading it. And then when I was doing defense work for the press office, would want a videotape so the jury could really see what that person was like rather than a cleaned up version. Now, would that be a crucial issue?
It's an issue. It's an issue, and it's a matter of choice. Nobody is stopping anybody from using a video in this case or in a workers' compensation case.
Mr. Counsel, let me ask. I'm sorry, were you finished with your response to the justice?
Yes, sir.
I'm not sure I understand why you don't argue. I mean, the General Assembly has made this decision, hasn't it? I mean, it's not for us to decide whether a video is more persuasive to a jury or not. I don't know why you don't argue that D, if you look at D and F together, the statutory scheme is that the General Assembly has expressly said that a deposition that's read in trial, whatever, I mean, they, that, those are their words, and we can't change them. Apparently they've changed them now, but we've got this statute. D refers to only depositions and says the Bureau will pay for the deposition that is read in trial. F is the catch-all phrase, which seems to cover primarily legal fees. I mean, that's almost all of F is after the cost of any legal proceedings authorized in the section, and then goes on to describe attorney's fees. Why wouldn't you be arguing that the statutory scheme is that the General Assembly has said there's a deposition that's read in trial will be reimbursed, but the cost of legal proceedings is catch-all for other things, and other things that can be deemed cost, obviously, than aren't depositions. Isn't that the argument that, isn't that the point, the issue we should be looking at?
Yes, sir, Your Honor. It's our position that the analysis should stop at D, that D talks about stenographic, and that's the end of it. What I've discussed is that the court wants to go further and look beyond D, and I don't think that with the new statute the court can do that, and there's authority to do that, but assuming that the court does look beyond D, then I would ask the court to look at the reasonable aspect under that. But I agree with you. After D, the analysis should really stop right there. You have a specific provision of the statute that says we're going to allow for stenographic, and that should be the end of it right there.
The counsel, the trial court determined that it was reasonable. Did it not?
The trial court determined that it should be allowed.
Okay. So the standard is reasonable, and presumably the trial court made a determination that it was reasonable. Is that an abuse of discretion?
We can only presume that the trial court intended or thought that it was reasonable. I think it still is an abuse of discretion because it's not permitted by the statute.
Well, that's not a discretionary call then. Your argument is it's error.
It's error, yes.
It's not a discretionary call if it's at odds with the statute. Right?
Under D, the argument stops at D.
And the reason is that D says what a cost for a deposition will be. The General Assembly has defined that, and so the cost of any legal proceedings authorized by this section in F, don't you have to refer back to the whole section? And D, and you go to D and you find the General Assembly has said what depositions will be reimbursed, and it's the one that's read in trial. Whether we like it or not, that's what the General Assembly has said. Isn't that, I'm making an argument for you, but I guess that seems to be so obvious, I guess, that if we're going to follow what the legislature said, that's the conclusion. If we don't want to do that, then we can do something else, I guess. But they clearly said that it's the one that's read in trial. They were behind the times, I guess. Now they've caught up, I understand, but this is a statute we have to apply or interpret.
Yes, sir, Your Honor. That statute was amended in September of 1997.
Counselor, the Williams case was decided March 29th, 1995. We took this case in on 5/28/97. Accepting that Williams is on all fours with this case, that is that the majority in Williams said clearly that you can pay for one but not the other, not both. Is there any difference between these two cases? And because your red light's on, let me tell you what I think. There's a local rule here, which is the only difference. And we haven't had much argument on that. Should that make any difference? Because otherwise, stare decisis, and you know how many of us strongly believe in stare decisis, that we could just say, case decided on the authority of Williams.
Your Honor, local rule does not make an expense a cost. A local rule simply provides guidance as to how a certain form of evidence is going to be used if, in fact, the party wanting to use that evidence uses it.
So the local rule being the only variable between this case and Williams is not a variable worth considering. Are properly considerable.
I don't believe that it should go into the determination of this case. Yes, sir.
So then your argument would be we should decide this case on entry. We've already decided in Williams because it's right on with it, or we should improperly allow it because it's already been decided.
You can decide based on Williams, and you can decide it based on the new statute.
Well, that isn't is that before us?
No, that really isn't.
Well, we can't decide on the
no.
statute. It's not before us, can we? Okay. I missed something.
You should have stopped.
Thank you, Mr. Pickford. Ms. Adler, you saved a little over 3 minutes of your time.
Williams has put it pretty clear, Counselor.
Your Honor, I believe that Williams' case only addressed paragraph D in inspection because they indicated specifically they could not look at that, and Moore did not control because Williams involved an unsuccessful claimant. This court decides George on the basis of Williams. It will ignore and actually treat George, who was a successful claimant, the same as an unsuccessful claimant. We do not believe that the Moore case, which the court has previously decided, would stand in light of that.
But, Counselor, perhaps the problem here is between F and D and a successful and unsuccessful claimant is that the General Assembly decided whether you're successful or unsuccessful, we want to see, our policy is to see that you have a chance to put on a case. And that means we're going to pay for your deposition costs either way, win, lose, or draw. But now if you win, other costs, we're going to pay some other costs. But we're not going to pay that for the unsuccessful. Is deposition, I mean, what you're presuming is that depositions gets back in the mix once you win.
Your Honor, I believe that the other form of deposition falls within the definition of cost under the rules of superintendent.
Doesn't it also fall within the definition of cost in D? Isn't it, if it's a cost in F, it's a cost in D, right?
Your Honor, this court in April said, and I believe what you said is true, that if you look at the entirety of D, it's really a procedural statute. When you get to court, the clerk sends the notice of appeal certified. Deposition documents do not have to appear. You've got E in the middle there. E talks about appeals on the division to go according to the civil rules. Then we get to F. That is what the trial court looks at. Now the case has been tried, and the judge will only look at if there is a successful claimant. I am aware that this court has also taken in a writing lot case out of the Supreme Court of Appeals, and I would, the dissent by Judge Shaw here, I believe, echoes our defendant in the George case. Judge Shaw indicated in his dissent in writing lot that by not going beyond a D, there's a chilling effect of forcing a claimant to forego videotape because demographic is required by the local rule. When a videographic deposition is required, a recorder is taken. It also is a tortured construction and implicitly restricts paragraph F. It may force the claimants choose then, and with respect to litigation, what is the most effective in presentation of trial of the case. And if this case is decided on the basis of Williams, it completely ignores the Moore decision, which indicated that workers' compensation successful claimants should not, their costs should not be dissipated by the cost of litigation. We believe that videographic definition or stenographic, whichever the alternative form to a successful claimant should be properly reimbursed under paragraph F, and that is consistent with the legislature's definition, which is very
Let's assume that you can distinguish this case from Moore and from Colesert. I'd still like to hear your answer on this. Pretend those cases don't exist. If you read F says the cost of any legal proceedings authorized by this section, including attorney's fees and so forth, cost of any legal proceedings authorized by this section, it seems to me you have to look then to see what legal proceedings that are authorized, and you go back and look at the definition of cost that what the General Assembly said we will reimburse the cost of deposition filed and that was read in the trial. Are we perhaps mixing the question of what is a cost with which cost that the Bureau
workers' compensation will reimburse. We don't really have to, we don't really have to explore the whole universe of what is the cost. The General Assembly has said there may be a lot of other costs, but what we're going to authorize the Bureau to reimburse is the cost of the deposition that was read in the trial. How do we get around that with F? I'm still not following.
Your Honor, I believe that if you read the remainder of F, it F indicates that those costs to a successful claimant will be borne either by the employer if the employer appealed or by the Industrial Commission. So there is a difference there between F and D, because D indicates the Bureau will pay. F indicates for a successful claimant, either the employer, if the employer contests, or the Industrial Commission will pay. And I believe that that is a difference with a distinction in the NDF. Again, the cost of any legal proceeding is very broad. This court has numerous times previously held that a plain and ordinary meaning of these words should be given unless there is a specific indication that the General Assembly intended otherwise. There was no indication that they did not intend the other cost to be reimbursed.
You don't think that F can be read when you look at F, particularly the last sentence, the attorney's fee should not exceed $2,500, and they refer to the amount of time expended by the attorney, that virtually all of F, it seems to me, is referring to attorney's fees. They want to make sure that somebody who wins, a claimant who wins, can receive their attorney's fees.
But I think the important word in that statute says including attorney fees. It does say only attorney fees. And I believe that is the broad catch-all provision. And this court is more indicated that this is a very broad section. And we believe that by permitting Mr. George both forms of his deposition costs, that this will be given full force and effect to 4120.512F. Which they intended to discuss the claimant.
You have used your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.